Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Spending in Wisconsin's state Supreme Court race continues to skyrocket as the candidates barnstorm the state in the final stretch. Plus, Republican lawmakers approve a series of bills aimed at transgender youth issues. And the candidates for state superintendent square off in the only forum ahead of the April 1st election. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for March 21st.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, we'll begin this week talking about, once again, the massive amounts of money that is funneling into the state Supreme Court race. And once again, we've reached another milestone, as some are now predicting that this race can double than what it was in 2023. That's upwards to $100 million. But, JR, you have been tracking this quite a bit throughout the campaign cycle, and you have now found it has now topped $76 million. And that isn't counting, right? I mean, this was a tally that you had from earlier in the week. It's likely going to get much bigger. But when you look at specific spending, too, about a third of that is just tied to Susan Crawford's campaign and how much she has on the air. We also know, of course, the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, has been funneling a lot of money to Schimmel's campaign as well. I should say groups affiliated with Elon Musk's super PACs. And this has been, I would say, probably the biggest issue in this race that you're at least hearing from the candidates themselves knocking each other on. You're getting money from this billionaire. You're getting this money from this billionaire. Let's first just hear the candidates on the campaign trail talking about that issue before we dive more into the numbers.
Well, I think it's really concerning when you have Elon Musk spending now over $12 million on a single race, especially a judicial seat. That's really unprecedented in Wisconsin. I think voters should be really concerned about that.
I was correct when I said she had spent $18 million, but now as of today, she has made $20 million in television ad buys by her campaign. For her to make as much of a campaign as she has about the Musk money is, I think it is hypocritical. And I do think that she needs to answer to where has the money that she's gotten to be able to spend $20 million on TV come from? Because that's unfathomable to have that kind of cash.
So also, JR, you reported this week that Elon Musk is also offering $100 incentives, essentially, for conservatives to sign this petition. And if they do, it's kind of in a way that they're going to try and help find other conservative voters. And this, of course, is a big race about turnout.
So, Elon Musk, his group back in last fall, somewhere in Pennsylvania, began as $47 for signing a petition about First and Second Amendment rights. Then it became $100. Then there was a random drawing of $1 million a day for somebody who signed it. Turned out it wasn't random. They actually picked somebody they thought was a good spokesperson for the PAC, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, nobody stepped in and stopped it. Now, there was a lawsuit, a civil suit filed by DA trying to prevent that. As far as I know, though, that didn't go anywhere. So will it be anything different in Wisconsin? We'll see. But this is a way to get information because you have to turn off your name, email address, your phone number, and your mailing address. Those are all ways to reach you to say you should turn out November 1st, or April 1st, I'm sorry, for Brad Schimmel. Why is that important? Because Elon Musk's PAC put out a polling memo this past week that argued if you can get the electorate to look like November of 2024, not April of 2023, then improves Schimmel's chances. So that's part of the motivation. Oh, by the way, it's why Musk has spent now about $15 million for his PACs. Now, I don't know that he's personally spent that money. It's Building America's Future and America PAC. They've combined for around $15 million between ads and GOTV efforts. And oh, by the way, that $76 million, that's old. It's $80 million now as of this morning.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
So it's coming in more every day. And what's missing, though, is we will get reports on Tuesday from the candidates. So my spreadsheet that I do every day, I've got independent expenditure reports from the state. I've got the ad spending from Ad Impact, which tracks those buys. And then I've got a little bit of what the campaigns spent besides ads. Tuesday, we'll get new reports. We'll see where they're getting the money. I will bet you'll see a bunch of big transfers from the state Democratic Party to Crawford, because you don't spend $23 million bucks on TV getting 20,000 donations. You're talking big transfers from the party help you make that happen. So I'm watching for that, but also get better spending numbers besides the ads, because they have staff. Mm-hmm. They do polls. They do mail. So I'll get better numbers. So that number's going to jump sometime next week when I get time to update the spreadsheet. But this is a record spending race. It's also become a nationalized race. It's a referendum of sorts. It's become, for Republicans, can you keep the Trump coalition together, mm-hmm. right? For Democrats, you're seeing all this pushback, right, against Trump and Elon Musk. It would be embarrassing for Democrats to have all this energy and not win this race. This is the first chance to have a statement about the Trump, second Trump era. If you can't win this one, what's that mean about your party? So they're kind of going all in. And that's where you're seeing these national people come and visit Wisconsin right now.
I think it's also going to be a big test for conservatives in this race, too, because they are, since November and that entire cycle, they've gotten their ground game almost together, it seems like. Yeah. They have these super PACs doing these things, these incentives, hey, sign up for this, get $100. Is that going to motivate people to get them to the polls? Because we know the state Democratic Party, specifically here in Wisconsin, has quite a foundation. They have for many, many years. It's been successful, right? Republicans, in a sense, have always been playing catch-up. So I'm wondering, too, with Crawford having so much TV ads, quite an edge over Schimmel, is that reaching people? Is their base there? Are conservatives going to make that up with people on door knocking and stuff like that? I think that's going to be fascinating to find out when it comes to April 1st.
So it's an excellent point, because the April electorate is different from November 1. So we had mm-hmm. three point whatever million voted in November. There was 1.8 million in April of 2023, which was almost a record turnout. I think it was record turnout for a non-presidential primary spring election. Well, how do you reach those people? Like, what's the most efficient way? So, I mean, I don't know what you watch for TV. I'm on a streaming service. I'm not seeing broadcast TV, and that's where the advantage is for Crawford, because candidates get a better rate on broadcast TV for gross ratings points, the volume of ads, essentially. I looked at some information from a media buyer just this morning. Looking statewide the last 2 weeks, Crawford by herself has more broadcast ads running than the entire Schimmel coalition. That's him, WMC, Issues Mobilization Council, Musk PAC, Republican Leadership Committee, all these groups, she's got more volume on broadcast TV. But digital, connected TV, all those other things, you know, where's the advantage? Are you reaching people more efficiently with more targeted ads?
I also think this is a really big weekend to have TV ads because, of course, I brought a package for the NCAA tournament to watch more games, and I have seen nonstop Crawford ads. Yes, there are some Schimmel ads to counter that, but that's also another big week where you're probably going to get a lot more eyeballs, so it's just going to be fascinating to see if this is also sometimes, oh, I didn't know there was election, or, oh, what is this? I'm going to Google it on my phone type of thing. But it depends how many people, like you said, a lot of people have apps now, the Netflix, HBO, they don't have a cable service anymore, so it's not as direct outreach as much as it was years ago. And speaking about that outreach and getting to voters and energizing their base, we had some big-time surrogates in the state this week. Let's begin with Monday. That's when Charlie Kirk, the Turning Point Action founder, and Donald Trump Jr. came to Oconomowoc, of course, a key area for conservatives in this race. They held an event for Schimmel. Schimmel also appeared on stage. Meanwhile, on Tuesday in Eau Claire, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz was there. Susan Crawford did not attend that event. She has been kind of keeping an arm's distance from many surrogates that have been flooding the state. Same thing with Bernie Sanders. I believe that was about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So that's kind of where you're seeing this difference. So for the Crawford campaign, they're saying, look, they're all tied together. You got Donald Trump Jr., close connections. You know, they're one. They're united. But yet when you ask Schimmel, even I asked him this week in an interview, you know, I don't care who's here, you know, campaigning on behalf. I don't care that there's these mailers out there saying I'm going to defend the Trump agenda. That's what they're saying. I'm just going to defend the law. And that has been his message ever since he was first asked about it during the debate.
So, like, I get why Crawford is making that comment of they're all tied together. But does anybody really believe that there's not a Democrat or Republican in this race right now?
Mm-hmm.
And look, for Schimmel, you can make that allegation all you want to. He needs the Trump coalition to turn out. So you're going to see, yeah, he's going to embrace Charlie Kirk and Donald Trump Jr. for a reason. He wants those Trump voters to turn out. We've seen the electorate in Wisconsin in April shift to more of a Democratic-leaning one versus past years. November, we're a purple-purple state. We're a little more of a bluish-purple in April anymore. Schimmel needs that those Trump voters who only come out for Trump to turn out in November to give him a better April to give him a better shot at winning. For Crawford, Tim Walz, emblematic of that energy thing I was talking about. There were 800 people in Eau Claire on Tuesday night. angry about Elon Musk, like, that tells you there's some energy there. Can they capture that, given the polls on April 1st?
Right. As we said before, this could really be a true test, a referendum on President Donald Trump's first few months in office. All right, let's look at some of the early voting numbers, too, because this is also gives us a flavor of the type of enthusiasm voters are feeling here in the state. And it looks like more people are in tune with this race just based on these numbers, mm-hmm. of course, because when you look at the total numbers of Tuesday to the first day of early voting that it was offered, more than 393,000 people returned absentee ballots. And that is well ahead of the pace 2 years ago when upwards to 326,000 ballots were returned during the 2023 spring election. Some other figures, too, diving into the data. Milwaukee County, they're up from 2 years ago. Same with Dane. Same with Waukesha. So these are promising signs. But also, is this a sign that conservatives are encouraging their base to vote early, which we have seen has been a big messaging for them over the past 2 to 3 years to try and play catch-up, as they say, with Democrats who typically prefer to vote absentee before Election Day?
Yeah, good point. The big change from 2 years ago, the emphasis by Republican Party of Wisconsin on early voting. Washington County, for example, deep red county, big increase compared to 2 years ago. Now, give me another week of early vote before I really kind of get a feel of like where this is coming from, because the question is, are these typical April voters, or are they November voters who are turning out? That's the key, especially for the Schimmel campaign. If Washington County, deep red county, if that's all people who vote every April, okay, great. Their vote is banking on looking at other people. But if you're not getting more casual voters out, you're kind of behind the Crawford campaign a little bit because, again, that natural advantage we're seeing in the electorate right now for Democrats in spring.
Right. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot more get-out-the-vote efforts in this next few days because we are very, very close approaching April 1st election. All right. Of course, this week was also a busy one in the state legislature as the Assembly and Senate were in session. Of course, they covered a wide variety of issues, but we're just going to be highlighting some of the bills that were approved by Republicans this week, starting with the Assembly. AB 24, of course, that's that immigration enforcement bill that would require county sheriffs to work with ICE and have to report individuals in their custody held on felonies to basically do a background check to see where they're from and show proof of their citizen status here in the America. Other bills were centered around transgender issues. One bill would require transgender women and girls to plan sports teams that match their sex of birth. Of course, we know the president signed an executive order already doing that exact same thing, but we had Republicans argue this takes it a step further, adding provisions like it would prevent transgender individuals from going in, you know, girls' bathrooms during, you know, changing before a sports game. AB 103 require parental consent for students changing their name or pronouns at school. And then AB 104, which would ban gender-affirming care for minors. Of course, all those bills that I just read in the Assembly, besides the immigration one, have either been rejected or have been vetoed by Governor Tony Evers in the past. But Republicans made their case for this issue as it could be something that we're likely to hear on the campaign trail in the coming years. So let's just take a listen from Democrats and Republicans on these issues.
The decisions we make impact whether these kids have access to life-changing, in some cases, life-saving, gender-affirming care. People are not looking to politicians to make these decisions. These are decisions that are best left in the hands of physicians, patients, their families, and their mental health care providers.
These are minors. They do need help. And we, as a full body, both Republicans and Democrats, have an obligation to make sure that we help and protect these children, these minors, from permanently changing themselves at such a young age.
So that was kind of this action in the Assembly this week. The Senate was also back for, I would say, their first full session day after they've only been in to vote on a constitutional amendment, which will appear on the April ballot. The headline bill that they voted on, which will now be sent to Governor Tony Evers' desk, is the bill that would overhaul the Department of Public Instruction standards for statewide tests.
There's a DPI race, I think, in a few weeks.
I think there is. I think it's April 1st.
Maybe related. Transgender issues and immigration. The election coming up. But anyway, I mean, not to diminish the policy that Republicans do believe in, but there may be a link to the fact they're highlighting these things right ahead of an election to kind of put them back in voters' view about what's going on.
And speaking of the DPI race, there was the one and only kind of DPI forum of the two candidates appearing at this. Of course, that is Jill Underle, the incumbent, and Brittany Kinzer, who is challenging Underle on April 1st. This forum, of course, comes as both have kind of been knocking each other on, well, you didn't agree to these debates, well, I can only do this one. You know, I asked Underle, of course, right before the primary if she was going to participate in debates. She said yes to me. So, of course, Kinzer took that opportunity saying, when are we going to meet? So Kinzer did agree to this one. You know, of course, it's a group that she would prefer not to have done. You know, there's also Wisconsin Broadcast. I mean, there's other outlets that wanted to do this, but at least voters have something to look on if they wanted to see the candidates square off. Let's first just hear from them, kind of defending their records when they were participating in this forum earlier this week.
My vision is that we all have, every kid in Wisconsin has access to a high quality public school education. And I have the relationships, I have the experiences, and I have the deep knowledge of what it takes to lead Wisconsin's public schools. I've built partnerships across the state and in the legislature. I also hold the necessary credentials, the licensing, and the expertise to do the work. And the progress that we've made is real. But our work isn't done. So I'm committed to keeping Wisconsin public schools strong and ensuring that every child has that opportunity to succeed.
I'm running to restore our high standards that were lowered back in the spring, restore them back to our nation's report card levels that Governor Evers had set for us 8 years ago, ensuring that the billions of dollars that we do have in education is getting into the classrooms, rewarding our great teachers and having less bureaucracy, and ensuring that the Department of Public Instruction is transparent, predictable, and innovative so that we can have an education system where 95% of our children are reading well enough to be successful.
Some of the themes that we heard during this forum is Kinzer knocking Underle for the statewide, changing the statewide testing standards, citing kind of the racial gaps, racial inequalities that are in schools, quote, failing kids. Meanwhile, Underle emphasized kind of Kinzer's credentials, knocked her for not having a teacher's license, which she apparently said that she has applied for another one to renew her old ones. Those are kind of the same themes that we've heard throughout this race.
Look, debates are great. We both enjoy joys are interesting
we
word
do, yeah.
covering
we do.
Them. But they only matter if you have a viral moment. Like if you look at the Supreme Court debate from last week, I've seen one ad taking Susan Crawford's line of "I don't regret that sentence" and using that against her. See if that's effective. Nothing from here really stuck out. Even if it did, how do you get oxygen in this environment? So Ad Impact, you know, tracks ads. We've been subscribing to that. A Better Wisconsin Together, first TV ad of the race up, hitting Kinzer. Kinzer's up on the air. Underle's on a buy, going to start soon. Just short of $3 million between the three entities. That sounds like a lot of money. It is not when you think of what's happening in the Supreme Court race. So how do you break through that environment? Like, there's finally some action in this race. There's finally something actually happening. Oh, by the way, we're both busy with the Supreme Court race, a budget, legislative session. There's not a lot of room for reporters even in Wisconsin to kind of cover the DPI race in general because there's so much going on.
Right.
They're fighting for attention, which gets back to their main problem of who's going to turn out on April 1st and do they get dragged along by their respective candidates. Now, it's not like Jill Underle and Susan Crawford are one or Brittany Kinzer and Brad Schimmel are one.
Right.
But they've kind of lined up right and left, right? So both Underle and Crawford endorsed by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. So if you vote for Crawford, do you vote for Underle? Same with Schimmel and Kinzer. Or does Kinzer have crossover appeal because she called herself a blue dog Democrat and she says she's not partisan and people aren't happy about the changes in the testing standards? Or does Underle kind of like have an advantage because typically in DPI races, the education establishment votes, like teachers, administrators, those folks, they're more likely to turn out and vote?
Yeah.
What's a drop-off going to be? We both know from covering presidential elections, more people vote for president than U.S. Senate. Happens every 4 years. What's a drop-off going to be here? That could be one of the keys in this race, right? Because if you're a Schimmel voter and you're a hardcore conservative, they're to save the court. Do you want to vote for somebody who went to the Democratic National Convention last summer? I don't know. Like, there's not been great polling in this race.
She said she also went to the RNC as well, but
yeah,
it's all these little things, right? If you see them in news reports as well. What I'm watching for is if you are just in tune with the top of the ticket race, right? I mean, you've seen, I would hope some people would see the ads by now or just the reporting that we're doing. Just remember, though, there's not going to be a D or R next to any of anyone on your ballot statewide. So if you're in tune with the top of the ticket, you might not know who these two other people are for DPI. So maybe are you guessing or you're just saying, well, I think my kid's school's doing well. I'll just go with the incumbent. I mean, I hope everyone educates themselves before but there are people who, you know, don't know everyone on the ticket. I mean, I've gone and there's local races where I didn't even know there was a local race in my area because I recently moved, those type of things. So it's just something that I think I'm going to be fascinated to see if there is that crossover appeal because it wouldn't be the first time that we've seen it here in the battleground state.
That's a great point too. I've heard that Democrats feel like their side has figured out Crawford is their candidate.
Mm-hmm.
They figure out that Underley's their candidate as well. And well, on the Republican side, well, those guys figure out that Kinzer's their candidate.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising is Wisconsin's immigration rates.
So Wisconsin Policy Forum did an interesting look at net migration last few years. It is up. Largely people from out of this country coming into Wisconsin. There was more migration into Wisconsin the last 3 years, ending June 30th of 2024, than the previous 18 years combined. It's almost all driven by people here coming here from out of the country. Now, on the one hand, that's good because the long-term forecasts for our population are not great.
Yes.
DOA, Department of Administration, back end of the year, early this year, said flat through 2030, then declining to 40 and 50. That's not good because we're predicted right now to lose a House seat in 2030 after the reapportionment, or after 2030's reapportionment. So you need more people to come in to change that because we're not having as many kids as we used to in Wisconsin. That's a problem for us. People aren't happy about migration, though, because Donald Trump ran on trying to curb immigration, legal immigration, saying we're going to stop this. We've seen the numbers drop dramatically since he came into office. What's going to happen going forward? We'll see. Will he be successful in basically stopping it? We'll see. But that surge for 3 years is mostly because people come from outside the United States. If that doesn't happen, what does Wisconsin need to get back into the right trajectory, population-wise, to fill jobs, have a workforce, all those kind of good things?
All right, let's get to Mix, and it's Elon Musk again, because we know he's a central figure in the state Supreme Court race, but he's, of course, a controversial figure as well.
Look, every race that we've covered, right, there's something out, it's off-year election, midterm election, off-year election. Every one of those races, something impacts the race that's not in control of the candidates, whether it's who's in the White House, what's driving the news, I always see that. I can't think of a single time I've seen a non-elected official be such a central figure in a race as Elon Musk. And I've asked the question, why? Democrats will tell you that their polling shows there is a visceral reaction to Musk, even more so than Trump. Like, for whatever reason, there's a lot of anger directed at Elon Musk from the Democratic base. They feel like moderate voters are turned off by him as well. The Marquette poll showed that a few weeks ago, right, that he's upside down with moderates. Republicans, though, can't get away from him. They need Elon Musk because of his spending. I mean, $15 million is nothing to sneeze at. His PAC put out a polling memo this week to Axios, which is a kind of a publication out in D.C., basically saying right now they have it at a 48-43 lead for Crawford. Now, I always caution, polling from any group that is involved in a race, you take it with a grain of salt. They argue that that 48-43 is if the electorate looks like 2023 spring, okay, when Jennifer won by 11 points. They also argue if you make it look like November of 24, it's a one-point race. They also say in the polling memo that she was down 13 points 2 weeks ago. Now, nobody I know in Wisconsin thinks that's okay. So, again, grain of salt with the polling. But it makes some interesting points. One, Crawford was getting 90% of Kamala Harris's voters. Schimmel's getting 86% of Trump's voters. Why? Again, Trump voters, more casual voter, more every 4 year voter, not coming out as much. I've talked to a canvasser who told me a story of they would see people who have Trump signs in the yards up in the fall, knocking the door, and there was an election going on.
Yeah.
Because they're Trump. They're not about everything else. If you can get those folks to turn out, that could be a game changer for Schimmel, which is why you're seeing Turning Point USA doing stuff, and Elon Musk groups. The question again becomes, can you turn those folks out? It has not happened since 2016, when Trump came on the scene, 18, 22, we have not seen the 23 spring election, the Trump voter now, the one big win for Republicans in a spring election of 2019, that wasn't really a Trump-inspired electorate that came out for Brian Hagedorn. So any of those folks would turn out. So there's that issue. Then you've got the efforts to reach through the petition, another new tactic to reach these casual voters. Again, can you make this electorate look like 2024? Another interesting thing happened this week. Looking at the spending, obviously $80 million plus, $7 million advantage for Schimmel's side. We've seen mostly crime, right, mm-hmm. on the side of the Schimmel. Actually, every Schimmel ad's been focused on crime. He released a new ad today on transgender issues. Now, my question is that the closing argument? You know, it just was released today. I haven't seen how much spending's behind it. Does that become the closing argument for the campaign of, and it's not about Crawford as the people she associates with, the people who support her are these radicals who support A, B, and C. We know from last year that is an issue that really animates a conservative base. I'm not quite sure still what it does in the middle. It feels like from my conversations that it does turn off middle swing voters on those issues, but is it a deciding one for them who they vote for?
And is it a motivating factor to go to the polls, yes. Right?
But again, if it's a base-on-base election, maybe that's going to get the base going. But anyway, go back to Musk. Here's a guy who's got his fingers all over. He's involved in almost everything. And Schimmel can't separate himself. He needs that support. He needs Don Trump Jr. He needs Charlie Kirk. Will Donald Trump himself come to Wisconsin last week of the race? Right?
Dun, dun, dun. We'll see.
Base-on-base election. That's what we're talking about now, is a base-on-base election.
And he is not formally endorsed. Schimmel, but Schimmel, of course, has welcomed it. All right, got about 2 minutes left. Falling this week is LeVar Charleston, why he was fired. We got some new documents.
These records came out last Friday, and I got to dive through them. So remember, he was the director of diversity DEI at UW-Madison. They removed him that position and said there were some reasons for that. Well, now we found out why. Questionable spending decisions. For example, going to a DEI conference in Hawaii. I don't know, you go for your training with your job, but I don't get to go to Hawaii for training with my job.
I wish.
All right, there's that kind of stuff going on. Lump sum bonuses to staffers under his watch. Basically doing things that were not cool with the administration. Jennifer Mnookin, the chancellor this week, defended the decision because somebody asked, well, hey, didn't it break the law or university policy? Why remove him? And she said, look, that's not the standard. All right, we've got to make good decisions. It's not really about him, though. It's about the bigger picture for the system, which is they asked for $855 million. Republican lawmakers had plenty of reasons not to give them $855 million. I mean, from declining enrollment overall to their questions about how it's being spent. This is like the cherry on top of the argument for Republicans of, look, this guy spent this money on that, and it was removed from position, but wasn't fired. He got a backup job. Right? That's how it works in higher education. You have this earlier position. And he's still on staff. Like, you guys got a problem. And I bring this up because now we're going to see in the coming weeks, just this week, Joint Finance Committee sent out letters to the head of corrections and Jay Rothman, the president of the University of Wisconsin, to appear for the committee April 1st. They're only going to have two agency heads testify this year. Usually, like last time, there were four.
Yeah.
Before, there were even more years ago. They're focusing on corrections because Evers wants to revamp the corrections system, and UW because of stuff like this.
And it's just the continuation of what we saw from past years mm-hmm. with Robin Voss, you know, having an issue with DEI. He got what he wanted, essentially, not probably fully, but he always said and indicated with also these audits, which we're going to get probably pretty soon here, looking into state agencies and DEI practices, what are they going to do else? Because he almost just, you know, he said, this is just the start of it. And what else can they do in the budget and things like this? I mean, even make it a platform issue as well and criticizing Rothman and what's going on under his watch, even though he did sign a deal that is supposed to eliminate DEI. What else is still going on elsewhere? And it's going to be definitely a huge theme that we're going to be hearing in the weeks ahead.
Absolutely.
All right. That will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.